So, hey everyone, this week we're kind of deviating from our normal political stuff, and I think we're going to get that a lot more lately just because I hate politics. And we're going to talk to Tara Strong. Tara Strong is an actress. She does primarily voices, but she also does a lot of live action stuff. And she's also very vocally political on Twitter. So I thought that was a nice way to kind of, bridge the gap here between me talking to political people and me talking to people in entertainment. And Tara's great. She's been really helpful to a lot of the families from Stoneman Douglas, and she cares a lot. She works with a lot of lovely people on just doing whatever she can to make people happy. And she has been in fucking everything. All right, I'm Googling it right now. I've got my phone. That's how professional I am here. I'm Googling Tara Strong voice actress, and I'm just going to go down the list, all right? She was in The Rugrats, she was in Powerpuff Girls, she was Timmy Turner in Fairly Odd Parents, Ben 10, Chowder, Teen Titans, she was Raven, and the spinoff Teen Titans Go, which some people love, some people hate, I don't mind it. She's the main pony, on My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. She's done video games, she plays Harley Quinn, she plays Batgirl. She has done so much. I mean, if you've heard something, that she's done it, and I'm such a tremendous fan of hers. I grew up with her in pretty much everything I watched, but I really think you guys are going to like the conversation I have with Tara. We talk about bullying, we talk about her work, which I'm such a big fan that you hear me gushing throughout the interview, and we're all over the place, and Tara's such a great interview, so here's Tara.
Let me handle it. I'll guide the ship.
Who is that?
That's Bubbles.
Okay, Bubbles. That's what I thought. Oh my God, so many people are going to be so mad at me for not knowing that was Bubbles.
You're going to be done.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. It's over.
Wasn't there a reboot recently of that?
We don't really talk about that.
Oh, okay. I genuinely didn't know. I remember when I was in fifth grade, two of my friends and I went as the Rowdy Rough Boys for Halloween, so I've got...
No!
Yeah, I've got...
Okay, you have to text me a picture of that.
I will. That'll happen almost immediately. Tara, there was a strike this year with voice actors, I believe. Can you talk about that?
Well, we approved to go to strike, but we didn't actually strike, which was good. They struck a deal. I'm not the most educated on all the details of the deals and money stuff. I'm like one of these weird people that like people say to me, oh, you must have made so much money on Rugrats. And I'm like, I have no idea. And they're like, yeah, right. I'm like, no, I really don't. I just had so much fun and I hate discussing money. I hate money issues. I don't come from money. I knew when I was 4 or 5 years old, I wanted to be a singer, dancer, actress, and I do what I love every day because I love it. And so when it comes to like money and deals and contracts, I'm kind of like unaware of the particulars. I did go to several meetings to sort of validate the importance of voiceover actors in video games. And that was one of the last things that we were fighting for, because when you go to do a series, let's say, for the most part, it's a full cast record, which makes it so much more fun. You know, you get to play off the other actors. And if someone says, let's get out of here, you might go, okay. And it really affects performance. And they can have you for up to a 4-hour session. But when you're doing a video game, it's just you by yourself up to 4 hours. Even if you're not doing 1,000 death sounds, it can be really vocally taxing. And the sort of negotiation to treat games the same as TV or web shows the same as TV has been sort of a sore spot for negotiations for a long time, because when an actor goes in to do a show that's going to be on an Amazon or a Netflix, or they're going to do a video game, or they're going to do a movie or a TV show, the acting is the same. I don't go, oh, I'm going to do a crappy job because it's a game. I go in and believe everything that I'm saying, and I picture everything in my mind, so it should be compensated fairly, and that's what that was about.
Sure. And you know, that kind of just ties in with the fact that I feel like a lot of people don't understand the principle of the fact that voice acting is its own art form, really, compared to acting, I feel. And you know, trust me, I'm an expert. I was in high school drama for 3 years. But you know, like, can you speak more to the concept of voice acting and acting? You know, in many ways they are the same thing, because vocally you're not just doing a voice. It's not like, you know, if I'm at a party, I'll do impersonations. But it's really its own type of acting. Like, I don't know how to sound eloquent saying it.
I'll help you.
Yeah, please.
So you're absolutely right. It's a totally different art form. I was casting at Disney for a bit, and they brought me in to do a pilot, and the producers had never done an animated show before, and Disney had brought in on-camera talent for cross-promotion, and I brought in all of my amazing voice talent friends. And they said, it seems like everybody that hugs you does really well. And I said, well, that's because you're asking tap dancers to do ballet and not everybody does. It is a different art form. And you get good at it with years of being in the studio and also all your training. I've often heard people say, oh, I really want to get into voiceover because they have a unique sound. And I'll say, do you have any acting experience? And I can't say enough how important it is to come from an acting place so that people buy that you are actually these characters. And whenever people say to me, how do you get in? I always recommend take as many acting classes as you can. Scene study, improv, singing lessons. You know, your throat is a muscle. It's an instrument. You need to learn what it can do and your range and how to play with it. And when you do improv, you build on all these different characters, and then you're not nervous when you get in a studio. And they can hire an actor for up to 3 characters for 1 SAG scale rate, which is, I don't know, like I said, I don't know money, somewhere around 900 something. So for that much money, they can get someone to do 3 different characters. So they're obviously going to bring in someone versatile enough to do 3 different characters on the spot rather than someone that can only do 1 voice. And it's a lot more complicated than just reading or doing an impression. And there's room for people that do impressions. There's room for people that have a funny sound. But by and large, the people that do really well in this industry are seasoned performers. They've come from Broadway. They're singers. They've done on camera and they've done their homework so that when it's time to get into the booth, they reach into their bag of tricks and they know what they're doing. Studio time's really expensive. So if someone's going to be nervous or mess up, they might not get a second chance. So I always say to people, be really ready. Take as many classes as you can. And then I say, you know, take a class with a mic so that you get to learn how to act within the parameters of the microphone from someone really reputable. There's a lot of bad people out there that say, oh, I did this and I'll take your money, and they charge a fortune. And unfortunately, people that are really hopeful will pay their, you know, every last dime to get in this business. And it makes me crazy because there's no guarantee that anyone's going to break in. I've met some of the most talented, extraordinary, versatile people that never get a shot. And so much is timing. And my biggest pet peeve is these companies that charge people to audition. That is the most.
Does that happen?
Oh, yeah. And I've called them out on their Facebook page, and they prey on hopefuls and say, if you pay to audition, we'll get you this part. And there is not one person in my world that got there because they paid to audition. That is a scam. That is not real life in this business. And please don't fall for that.
That's ridiculous. And speaking of your world, it seems like there's a real community in voice acting. I mean, I was looking at your IMDb page earlier, and there are a lot of people that just keep popping up, like D. Baker. I grew up on a lot of your stuff. You know, I was always watching Fairly Odd Parents. I was watching all the superhero stuff because I'm a big comic book fan. And you it seems as though you work with a lot of the same people very often. And is there some sort of secret coalition that we don't know about?
It's a secret code. You have to know the password. Do you know whose voice this is?
Oh, is that Raven?
There you go!
Okay, thank God.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I see the same, like, 20 people everywhere I go. It's a very small community. It's very hard to break in. And, you know, often I'll meet people and they'll say, I'm giving up everything and trying. And it's like, oh, gosh, it's so hard to break in. Not that there's not room for new talent. And every so often someone will come in and be extraordinary. Like Eric Balza came in to do Fairly Odd Parents. And I was like, you're going to be a big star.
That's the guy who was like Cosmo and all those other characters, right?
No, Balza was Foop. And,
oh, Foop. Oh, yeah. My God. Foop was a staple of my childhood. He's the one who taught me like how to be an evil douchebag.
I love him so much. But now he's like, you know, Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny and Marvin the Martian. And he's just
really
killing it, which I knew he would. Yeah. So you always know, like, oh, that person's going to be a big star in this business.
Sure. I'm looking at your IMDb right now. How often do you act against yourself? Because I understand that, like, you know, especially with more ensemble-like shows, like I'm sure in My Little Pony, you and all the other ponies are just standing there together, playing off each other. That's my guess. But
is this like a dream of yours, like the ponies all playing off each other?
Oh yeah, of course. I always think about that. I can't imagine you and the other, and you know, Scott Menville, Hindon Walsh.
Yeah.
And all them, you know, and all you guys just sitting doing Teen Titans Go, like.
Well, we have the most fun on Teen Titans Go. We're a family. We've been together like 18 years when we started out doing Titans. And it's so collaborative. It's so fun. We have so much fun. If I told you how much fun we had and we get paid, you'd be angry. Like, we just have the best time. I forgot your initial question because I wanted to answer it.
The question was, how many times have you...
Oh, I play off myself all the time. So Pony's actually one of those that I don't that much, and that's because most of the cast is in Vancouver, and Twilight will have, like, you know, 90 lines an episode or 1,000 lines that are special, and it's like, let's let Tara just do that. But on pretty much every other show I do, I'll play incidental characters or often two leads. You know, I'm doing the DC Superhero Girls right now, and I'm playing Batgirl and Harley, and I put on my Twitter a picture of both of them once, and I said, and you think you have an identity crisis, because... I play off myself the time.
Well, Harley's basically a superhero right now, the way DC's marketing it. I mean, she's like their new Deadpool.
She's pretty great, right, Kim?
Oh, that's a Harley if I've ever heard one.
Are you my partner or what?
Now, but before we're going to cut to the ad, and that's when we're going to talk about politics. But before we do, I have one more question for you, and I feel like this is a very valid one. Do you think Ben 10 is more of a Bernie type liberal or more of like an establishment Hillary, you know, Elizabeth Warren type?
Don't be such a dweeb, Cam. Go on hero. He'd probably want like an alien politician. Like, can't we have like Stinkfly and Heat Blast? He could be like vice president and president. What do you think?
Heat Blast takes way too much money from Big Pharma. Well, Tara, we're about to talk about politics and that whole shitscape that is the world. And I'm also going to ask you if you're okay, because you're LA-based, I think, and there are fires, but you seem fine. But before we do, I am going to do the ad. Our sponsor this week and the past couple weeks has been Anchor. Now, Anchor is a fantastic platform. They have most of the podcasts out there. And if you are one of the jerks like me who thinks that they can have a podcast and what they have to say has any actual value, you need to get involved with Anchor. Anchor helped me produce this. They helped me put it together. They helped me find the art, all the music that I used. Anchor is the one-stop shop for anybody who needs to put something out there and make your voice heard. Because, you know, we live in a time where everybody really, really thinks that what we have to say is valuable. And sometimes it really is. So get involved with Anchor. You can go to anchor.fm/start to figure out everything you need to do. They have been so immensely helpful. I've been trying to get this out for months. You guys know I have a couple interviews that I can't even use, like with Sean Spicer, which was something I wish I could put out there, and just a couple other, because I didn't have a producer who was really able to put it out there for me. But Anchor has been amazing, and I don't know where I'd be without them. So check out anchor.fm/start. Now, Tara.
Yeah.
You are very openly political on Twitter.
It didn't really happen until Trump started running, to be honest with you. I was completely bored when political conversations began, and I grew up in Canada, so I didn't, and I still don't know that much about the American political system, I'm afraid to admit. I come completely from an emotional place, and I've always had a really strong anti-bullying platform. My sister was different. My mom was really heavy. And I used to hold their hands when they came home crying from being bullied. And once I saw the ultimate bully gaining power, I just became enraged. And I you know, of course, people said, shut up and do your voices, or shut up and impress me. And I was like, wow, if I lose a job and help one kid get reunited with their parent or stop one more school shooting, I'm okay with that. And I feel so compelled to try to use my voice to help. And that's really where I come from politically. I sort of feel like my position with the kids from school shootings and the families and their survivors is to give them moments of happy. So my husband's in real estate, and he sold the Bob Hope estate this year. And one of the trustees is the Montalto's grandpa. And as soon as Gina was killed, he called us, and it was just so heartbreaking. And I was going to do a con in Florida, and it was close to you guys, and we offered to get them passes, and also for Anthony's friend, and we showed them a really great time at the con, and then we had a big dinner for everyone. And I had just put out on my Twitter, I had one ticket left, that I wanted to take somebody deserving to be my date. And I was sitting next to Jennifer Montalto, and I said, and she had mentioned that Anthony really liked Titans, and I was like, so I kind of need a date for the big premiere. And it was one of those huge premieres where they shut down Hollywood Boulevard. And I said, do you think Anthony would like to be my date? And Jennifer's like, oh, we're coming.
Oh, that's so
and
funny.
She put out on her Facebook, like, what should he wear? And he had, like, shoes that lit up purple. And
oh my God, he was
so cute. And I was so happy to be with them. And I actually ended up getting all of them passes. I had one left, and Greg Sipes gave one up so that the whole family could come and do the red carpet with me. And it was so, so special. And I'm so happy to have been given them that memory.
Oh, that's great. Tony Matalto, the dad.
Yeah.
That guy gets his work done. He's so cool. He intimidates me so much. I always judge adults who are parents by how much they intimidate me, and Tony Matalto, I see him and I'm like, this man is getting down to business. That's such an amazing family. I love them.
Oh God, I love them so much. We keep in touch. We text all the time. I just love them. I mean, all of you guys, you're all heroes to be standing up.
Stop.
No. I really think that, and it's not easy. And I see the online bullying, and it just infuriates me. Of all the online bullying trolls, I think the absolute most despicable is the ones that go after shooting victims. And I just don't understand. Like, y'all have been through enough to not support and be there. And if you disagree, then don't say anything. But to go after you guys is just heartbreaking. And that's
exactly
not what the internet's for.
Well, there's really two schools of thought. Now, the way I always kind of handled it was there were people who went out there and were genuinely criticizing what I had to say, and they were taking the arguments that I was making, and I was being put up there on TV like I was an expert, and a lot of people were watching what I had to say. So the people who got out there and said, here's what's fundamentally wrong with this point, here's why I believe that it's wrong, that's one thing, and I actually think that's good for discourse. But then there are people who were just, you know, like saying like, oh boy, you kids are the ones who should have died, and that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, disgusting.
But I want to go back to something you said that I think is really interesting. You mentioned that your base in politics is a lot more driven emotionally, and I think that it's really kind of productive for you to say that, because a lot of people, a lot of politics is based in your principles as a human being, and therefore it becomes emotional because this affects our lives, and the government has become so big that, you know, very often it does affect people in these ways that I don't necessarily think it should. But, you know, people said, shut up and go back to your voices. You got Laura Ingraham doing the shut up and dribble thing. And I never really knew how I felt about that, because I always said, you know, celebrities getting involved with politics, on the one hand, what do they have to say? On the other hand, these are human beings who have platforms. And therefore, if they want to use that to advocate for what they believe in, that's kind of their right as a human being. But Hollywood just gets slammed so hard for taking the least bit of a position on anything. I mean, do you get a lot of backlash for that?
Oh, my God. It's every day. And it's so much. And it's so strange. You know, Hollywood is not new to politics. Hollywood and politics have been married pretty much the entire time. And, you know, for especially this president, who was a reality TV personality, for people to tell me to shut up is like, this guy had no political background. He was on a reality TV show. And you're so right. Like, to dehumanize Hollywood and say you're not allowed to have an opinion because a performer is completely absurd. It's like telling a barber he can't have an opinion, or a school bus driver, or a doctor, or anyone for that matter. We're all here. We're all citizens. We all have a right to an opinion. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're not hurting someone, then your opinion is valid and should be heard. And I just think that sometimes that gets twisted and ugly. And I think the internet is one big, you know, I think Twitter in particular is one big game of broken telephone, and things get misconstrued and then hate gets thrown. And I wish, listen, I'm such a Pollyanna at heart. Like, I wish we didn't have a two-party system. I wish that way the Republicans and the Democrats wouldn't have a reason to hate each other. You know, it's like we're voting on the person that's best for this job. We're voting on the person that's best for that job. I would bet $1 million not every Republican believes every Republican ideal, and not every Democrat believes every Democratic ideal. And those ideals have changed over the years. And I think certain constitutional laws need to change over the years. And that's another thing that the NRA gets their people so worked up about and say, oh, everyone on the left wants to take away everyone's guns. That's absolutely not true. It's just that when the Constitution was created, again, I'm coming from an emotional place, nobody had AR-15s. Nobody had something that could blow away 26 people at a time or whatever it is. And things need to change with time, like everything else. And I don't think it's irrational to say, how do we protect our citizens the same way they did in Australia or England? Like, we are losing this battle. Seattle. It's every day there's mass shootings, sometimes two. And everyone is a sitting duck, and liberals do not want to take away all your guns. They do not want to take away your right to protection. But I strongly believe in a buyback program like the one that worked in Australia. And wouldn't it be amazing if they could figure out a way, and I'm not claiming to be an expert on this, and I know there's going to be a lot of trolls saying, shut up, you're an idiot, but wouldn't there be an amazing way to implement a buyback program where some of the money could go to veterans and, you know, really help boost this country's economy while keeping everybody safe at the same time?
Sure. And you know, that's kind of what that's my big problem with the two-party system is that there are these, you know, two ideologies where you have to kind of have this monolithic point of view. And that drives people to think that their intellectual opponent is inherently an evil person. So
yeah, that's not true.
Yeah, I always use this for the pro-life, pro-choice argument. I have my own views. I generally on that, I keep it to myself because I'm not somebody who can get an abortion. I think my opinion's still valid because I have it, but I try to stay quiet on that. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of the people who are pro-choice are not interested in killing babies. And a lot of the people who are pro-life are not inherently interested in oppressing women. And what happens is I feel as though a lot of people will instantly attach a label to a concept. So if somebody wants more gun laws, they're instantly a Maoist. And if somebody doesn't want more gun laws, they instantly don't care when kids die. And,
right.
And that always pisses me off. But one of the things I like about your activism is you just complete – when you're getting involved with something – you leave work at the door and you're speaking as a person. It's like, you know, because very easily somebody in your position could be phone banking for a candidate and have freaking Timmy Turner calling people. It's like, remember when the lady who voiced Bart did that whole thing for the Church of Scientology?
She is a Scientologist. That's true.
I actually wanted
to do funny voices when I was phone banking, but most of the time, and I'm sure everyone who's phone banked will have experienced this, you get an answering machine, nobody answers, and often if they're for the other side, they're really rude. But wait, I'm Timmy Turner, and do you have any kids around? Can I make anybody laugh, even if we disagree?
Just imagine if Tom Kenny just called people and had Mr. Jellybean saying, oh, that's not a good character to use, and had SpongeBob saying,
yeah.
I try to keep Mr. Jellybean out of this. Mr. Jellybean's controversial. You know what I mean.
If everybody could really take down the labels and take down the hatred and recognize that there is no teams. It's us. We are all a people. We all want the same thing. We all should want equality, regardless of the color of your skin, where you're from, your sexual orientation, your religious beliefs. It's just insane to me that we're still fighting for this in this country and we're not moving forward. And I think that's the beautiful thing about your generation and you guys in particular from Parkland, getting people involved and getting people out and voting and recognizing that this generation has a big voice and your generation, by and large, is about equality. And I think that's really beautiful and it's something that should be embraced. And it's time to throw away the old ideals that, to be honest with you, surprised me that still existed in this country. I'm like, I always knew there was some racism and some anti-Semitism, but to see the level has been frightening and disappointing and saddening on so many levels.
Yeah, and it is very disappointing. But you know, I feel like what you said about my generation is in many ways true, and in many ways, you know, I'm nervous about my generation because I feel as though we are kind of getting just so attached to creating images of ourselves as opposed to building character because of the way social media works. I mean, you know, I can't go a day without my phone. I can't go 2 hours without my phone, and that might be because I work and am actively doing things. But you know, I feel as though we're kind of coming into a time, and this is the last thing I really wanted to talk to you about today. We're coming into a time where people are really detaching from really kind of, you know, human interaction and are getting so involved in creating this fake persona for ourselves. And but before I continue, how old are your kids again?
I have 14 and 17.
Well, okay, so you know, I have a lot of friends who are the ages of your kids. I mean, I was the age of one of your kids like a couple weeks ago. Uh-huh. And I have to ask you, from a parent's perspective, what can we do to kind of just bring my generation, as we kind of take our first swing at adulthood, back into humanity? I feel like we're just living in these other worlds.
You know, you're so smart, Cam, and that's such a valid question, and it's a loaded question. There's so much to it, and there's so many layers, and I think it starts when the kids are young. My older one is a musician, and he was really always attracted to classic rock, and now he's into jazz, and he's not your typical, pop music guy. And he, as a kid, he hated Justin Bieber, like hated him. And there was a video on YouTube, and I remember he was like 5-6 years old, and he's like, "Mom, can I say you stink, you suck," whatever it was that he wanted to say. And I said, "You know, Sam, just because you don't like it, there's a lot of people that do. And Justin worked really hard to get where he's gotten. And he worked really hard on this song. And you putting it down doesn't make you feel any better, won't make him feel any better. It's not a nice place." And I spent quite a bit of time teaching him about social media etiquette and empathy. And a lot of times, because social media is by the second, you have to teach kids that. And so I made sure to educate them in that. And they don't spend a tremendous amount of time on social media. They do love Snapchat, which I had to say, this one left me hanging and this one didn't answer my snap. And I'm like, okay, this is not real life and it's not human interaction. And I do think even for my generation, this is not just yours, human interaction is definitely in trouble. It's taken a huge backseat to the addiction to our cell phones. And I think, you know, the way around that is using social media to really get involved. Like when I spoke at the White House for the kids for DACA, I went on behalf of Races, and Races wanted to present the government with a check for $50,000 and say, let's get these parents out of jail so they can go get their kids. And I went and I spoke, and it was set up because I met the people from Races on social media. And while I was there, this girl came over to me. She must have been 13, braces, crying. She was Hispanic, and she said, "Ms. Strong, I've been a fan of yours for so long, and I'm a DACA kid, and thank you so much for using your voice." And I think if we start with social media as a platform to do good and teach inclusion, no matter what side you come from or what you're raised with, and listen to each other and be there for each other and teach empathy, I think it could be a really great thing. But like I said, it helped me to be on the ground. It helped me to be out there with the people and doing things and being interactive with people and staying busy. It's important. It's okay to take pictures of it and post it on social media.
Sure.
But as long as you're involved in doing things, and you guys really are. So even though, you know, you're addicted to your phone, give yourself a pat on the back for getting out there, especially in this political climate. I think you're doing just fine.
Well, the last thing I'll say before we go is who's someone that I can get you to talk mad shit about? Let's just say horrible things about Kevin Conroy real quick. He seems like a jerk.
Well, he's only a jerk when he's mean to my puddin'. How about that, Cam? Then I want to kick in his bat brain.
Well, Tara, thanks so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll speak again when I know how to actually conduct an interview. I've just been shit-talking.
You did great. You did great.
So yeah, that was Tara Strong. She's lovely. She's great. She's been so helpful and kind. And you can take what you want out of that interview. I don't think there was any lessons that I could really teach you here, except be kind to one another and remember just how hard voice actors and actresses work. And next week we've got some really exciting stuff. I don't know which one I'm releasing next week, but it's either going to be Guy Benson or Ethan Slater. Guy Benson is a fantastic person. He's a Fox News host, but not that kind. And Ethan Slater played SpongeBob on Broadway, and he's playing Joel Grey in this awesome new series that I'm really excited for now. So I don't know which one's going to come out, but expect more. And I hope y'all have a good day.